A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. My name is the Renegade Statman, and a very warm welcome to a very special episode where we're joined by a man who doesn't need any introductions, but I went through too many stats to not list a few of them. 106 Premier League goals, 55 goals for Ipswich Town in 142 appearances, and he scored 50 of those goals before his 21st birthday, which is a record. So very warm welcome to Darren. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what are you up to at the moment? I keep updated from your Twitter feed. If people aren't asking you questions when you're sitting on a train, you're also on Talk Sport.
Yeah, so obviously the media starts going well. As you said there, at TalkSport every day, pretty much. Well, I will be for next season. Doing obviously a lot of the Sky stuff, a lot of the Premier League production stuff as well. So no, it's going really well. I was one of the fortunate ones. I'd have to say that when I retired, it was almost like there was a kind of pathway laid out for me. Like I'd spoke to a few companies about doing some work down there, and it's kind of just transitioned from there. It's going well. I enjoy it. I tried the whole coaching. Just wasn't for me. Like I tried it, I loved it while I was there, but the moment I left the training ground, I kind of forgot about it. So that's when I knew that kind of path weren't for me. But no, I enjoy the media stuff. It's going well, and obviously long may continue.
Yeah, good stuff.
Darren's very good, by the way. I've done a couple of Premier League TV gigs with him, and a lot of pundits on TV now. Obviously, I've done a bit of TV work as well. And they're only interested in clickbaits, what will make viral clips and stuff like that. And people don't really go into the actual football and the details and the key elements of striking a ball or a tactical thing. And Darren has got that off to a tee. And I remember speaking to Darren in the green room at one of the places, and you were saying about JJ, Jermaine Genius, was probably your inspiration, because JJ is obviously being touted as the next Gary Lineker. And like I say, I don't say this just because Darren's here. Darren's on a great path. He's very good at the media, and the media and Darren have fitted like a glove. So, all great and
good stuff. And talking about fitting like a glove, I didn't introduce you, Kieran. I'm not sure whether I want to call you my co-host, but yeah, thank you as the person that kind of, like you said, we've. Going through your contact list and speaking to some old players and hopefully rekindling some memories of Ipswich Town. I want to take you back, Darren. It's 1998. You're 14. Ipswich have just missed out on, I think, their first or second playoff defeats in the playoffs, and you joined there. And what was it like? What was it like as a 14-year-old at that time with some pretty big names in and around the first team?
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, Ipswich Town for me was a club that obviously I knew who they were, but I didn't realise the size of the football club until I actually got there. Because the season before, I'd been touted to go to Cambridge. I was in the East Anglian area. I went to train with them, but for whatever reason, something just didn't feel right. But I remember playing for my local Sunday League side. And I think it was Malcolm Moore and a guy called Colin Suggett. Obviously, I think Kieran will remember both of them. They came up to me after a game and handed me this brochure. And they were like, well, this is Ipswich Town. And it had pictures of like Kieran in it, Richard Wright was in it, Titus Bramble was in it, James Scowcroft was in it. They were the ones I can remember. And I remember just looking through it. And I think Kieran had played for England youth at the time. I think Titus had. I remember thinking, wow, like, okay, this is obviously Ipswich Town, a big deal. They've obviously got a fantastic academy. They've obviously got players that have come through that academy that have, of recent times, because you know it's like you get a lot of football clubs that talk about their academy, but they have one player come through every 10 years. I could see that Ipswich Town was like a conveyor belt, one after the other, one after the other, one after the other. So I remember just having a conversation with mum and dad and saying, I want to go there. That's the place I want to go. And when I got there, to be fair, I couldn't believe it. I mean, the training facilities were kind of ahead of their times. The turf, the grass was like nothing I'd ever seen before. The coaching staff, their methods, it was all just completely new to me, but it was always something that I thought, yeah, I want a bit of this. So from day one, I mean, people helped me settle in. Ambrose was the kind of, which is obviously funny because obviously as you look at now, TalkSport, me and Daz, he was the first one because I remember forgetting my boots, my shin pad, sorry, the first ever game for the academy. And Ambrose was like, oh, don't worry, here you go, here's mine. So obviously me and Daz have had a friendship, as you probably well know, for a long, long time. But it was just a fantastic club to join. And I'm absolutely delighted that I managed to obviously kind of succeed there and learn my craft there.
You talked about a conveyor belt at Ipswich, and there was myself, and then the year below, a couple of years below, was Titus, then there was Richard Logan, and there was Darren Ambrose, then there was you. It was just like, even as me being in the first team player, I knew the next one coming through, the next one coming through, the next one coming through. Obviously, Richard Logan was meant to be the next big thing, and he was probably a year, 2 years older than you.
Yeah.
Is he someone that you were looking at as competition, or someone that you just thought you were better than from an early age and that you were going to get to places that he weren't?
Do you know what? I've got a lot to thank Logie for without him actually kind of knowing it, because as you said there, I remember, and I don't know if you can remember, when the two kind of youth teams used to play, it might be 15s and 14s or 14s and 15s, they were quite, the two pitches were next to each other at Bent Lane. And I remember this one time in one of the breaks, I think we used to play 420 minutes. My dad went over to watch the couple of years above. And I remember him coming back to me after the game again. You need to go and see this kid that's over there playing for Ipswich Town, because if you want to get to the first team, you're going to have to get past him because he's incredible. And I remember watching him train and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, his touch, his pace, how strong he was, he could score goals, his technique. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, like, how am I going to get to that level to get myself in the first team? Because I think him and Titus were tight at the time. But to be fair to Logie, he always helped me. Whenever I spoke to him, he'd like, that you're doing really well, try this, try that. And I remember, and I'm sure we'll get onto it a bit later, I remember, I think I was 16, and I kind of smelled blood because I'd gone away in the summer and I'd worked hard, running. I came back and the first kind of fitness test, I blew him out of the water, ran past him like he wasn't there, I was lapping him. And that's when I kind of knew, oh, okay. Then obviously I started to score a fair few goals the moment I walked in the door and I started to apply a bit of pressure. And to be fair to Logie, he didn't really react. Like even though when I was catching him and going past him, it wasn't like he had any kind of fight in him where he was going to go, I'm not letting this young kid do it. He kind of just let me do it. And by the time I got to the same level as him, I knew that it was going to be a matter of time before he moved to the side.
Very good. Because I had the same situation with Stuart Niven. He made his league debut before me and I was pissed.
Yeah.
I was like, that ain't happening. While I know I'm better than him, and I just used, a bit like, I'm not saying we're Michael Jordan, but when you watch that Last Dance documentary and the little slights that he used as motivation.
Yeah.
It's crazy how us footballers, we use any kind of thing like that to just give us the edge.
Yeah.
Kieran, obviously, when Darren joined, what was it like in the first team? Did some of the players take an interest in what was happening in the academy, or you know, when did Darren first come on your radar?
Like I said, from early days, we always knew the pecking order. Like I said, it was from my year. Then there was a Kevin Ingles, who unfortunately broke his leg, was the year below me. Then there was Titus. Then there was Logie, Darren Ambrose, and then Darren Bennett. And you always knew that these players, it was just a matter of time before, especially having George Burley as the manager.
Yeah.
George was just throwing people in left, right, and centre. He loved playing kids. I think he took more satisfaction in playing kids than any manager I've ever known. So it was just a matter of time. And yeah, like you said, Logie probably proved this wrong, but Darren went from strength to strength, and we'll touch on that later, to get into the 100 club and stuff like that in the Premier League is testament to his goal scoring abilities.
To be fair, even above him, there was people like Neil Midgley. Do you remember him?
Yeah, Neil Midgley was in my year. Very good.
I remember
my favourite striker to ever play with. He was, because he was there. He just knew when I wanted to play a one touch ball around the corner, I knew he was going to be there. Just me and him, we were like telepathic in the youth team together.
It's quite strange because I remember, when I got into the reserves at quite young, he'd won the golden boot in the reserves. And I remember George Burley saying to me, I don't know if it was a joke or it was a bit of motivation, but I remember him coming up to me and saying, just remember, Neil Midgley won the golden boot in the reserves. And I don't think he ever played a first team game. So it was a bit like...
Yeah.
So I was like, what does he mean by that?
Just because you scored goals in the reserves, still the next level to go to.
He did make his debut. I'll have a look in a minute, but he didn't make that many appearances. Darren, you won the under-17 Academy League and got to the FA Youth Cup semi-final. And obviously, I think it was around that time that you were playing for England, and I think you went through under-15, 16, 17s and stuff like that. But I want to bring you to November 2001. A lot of Ipswich Town fans remember this game, particularly for the fun that they had in Harry's Bar over in Helsingborg. But yeah, your debut, you came on second in the game that Town won 3-1. And just kind of your thoughts before, you know, the build-up, you know, was... Did you understand the magnitude of a game that was being played live on TV and Ipswich were in the UEFA Cup?
Yeah, I did. I mean, that season there, I mean, it was all flat for me. I think I was in the reserves, obviously, playing, scoring goals. I won the golden boot, funny enough, that year in the reserves. But I just remember travelling everywhere with the first team, just thinking, please, just give me my debut. Like, I felt ready, even though I was 17. And listen, there was some Marcus Stewart, like one of my heroes. You know what I mean, for how good he was. I just felt, come on, just give me the opportunity to play. Give me the chance. And I remember eventually, I think it was George saying to me, go and warm up, like, you're going on. Like, he said to me before, like, loads of times, go and warm up, but he never said you're going on. This time he went, go and warm up, because you get ready, you're going on. I remember I was like, sprinting up and down. And all I kept thinking to myself was just, please give me a chance. Give me one chance to get a goal. And if I had a chance, the keeper made a really good save. But it was one of them where... The step up was just huge. I felt like the step up was massive, not just because the opposition weren't great, Helsingborg weren't great, but the whole magnitude, as you said there, the occasion, being in the UEFA Cup, it being live on TV, it just felt like nothing I was ever been used to before in my life. So it was fantastic, something I still remember. I remember it being a little bit cold. And if I can remember rightly, Marcus Stewart scored two, and one of them was incredible, like a chip. I think he scored like a chip or something. But yeah, it was incredible. As I said, it just felt like I kind of got the rewards for having a really good season. Well, from under-14s all the way up to that point, it felt like I got that debut because I've worked hard, got to the grade, and that was George Burley kind of saying, these are your rewards, I can enjoy yourself.
And did you enjoy yourself after the game? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember all the players getting congratulations. Obviously, all my friends on the phone, on the Nokia 5110. Texted and said, congratulations and that. But no, it was good. It was really good.
Did you really enjoy it? Well, Jim Magilton couldn't have been player then. Because if Jim was playing, he'd be moaning like hell. Give it a ball.
I got the rough of Jim a few years later for a couple of years. But that day, you know, I remember he was all right. He was really supportive. Yeah. I remember Matt Ollam was the one who was the first one over. Congratulations. He was a proper skipper. Do you know what I mean?
Sisto Peralta played in that game. It was a great loan signing from Inter Milan. Couple of games later, you made your home league debut against Bolton Wanderers. But most people will probably remember the game for being overshadowed by a, a, a debutant in Ulrich Le Pen who came on and got injured in that game. Do you remember much about when he came on, or what was it? What did it feel like to be turning out at Portman Road?
Yeah, if I can remember Ulrich as well, I think he was left-footed. And I think there was a little buzz about him, to be fair, if I can remember rightly. I mean, when I look through some of the old programmes, the amount of names I forget about. But I remember him, yeah, I remember the injury, and I remember there was a lot of excitement about it. But I remember that game against Bolton. I remember me obviously getting the start. I remember me not doing much. I remember not, I wasn't overawed by it, but I felt like everything was just 100 miles an hour. I'm thinking, right. And I remember, I think I came off after about 60, 70 minutes, quite disappointed in myself because I thought, oh, I could have had more of an impact on the game. That was my opportunity. So I kind of sat down when I came up and thought, oh, like, am I ever going to get another opportunity? I was gutted. You know what I mean, gutted. I wanted the opportunity again. But no, again, it was something that I learned, took like great pride in learning from, how to kind of play in the Premier League, to deal with it. And I always kind of say to myself, I left Ipswich at the time I did because I felt I was ready. Do you know what I mean? I was ready to go to the Premier League at that time, which we'll probably touch on later. And I've seen other players who have been in my under 15, 16 England squad getting in the Premier League, scoring goals. I remember me thinking, well, I'm as good as them. So I know I can, but it's just about timing. So maybe at 17, making my debut, maybe to play week in, week out might have been a bit much for me. So I remember coming off a little bit disappointed in my performance, but buzzing to have made my Premier League debut.
Strikers make me laugh, don't they, Stat Man? He says, I didn't do much. Most strikers don't do much. Chance they score a goal. That's normal for you, Benty, but usually you just get a brace at the end of it.
Well, he scored his your first senior goal in the following month in the League Cup at, I think it was away at Newcastle, yeah. In a, I think it was a 4-1 defeat. But you know, what did that feel when you finally you know, got your first notch on your belt as such?
Yeah, now that I can remember like it was yesterday. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, the first time I've been to St. James. No, that wasn't the first time. I've been there before for James Park to play. Well, have I? I think that might have been the first time I've ever been there, actually. And I remember walking out for the warm-up and thinking, oh, my goodness. Like, are all Premier League stadiums this big? Like, it was massive. And then, obviously, I'm sitting on the bench. I go to warm-up, and it was so loud in there. I remember thinking, what is going on here? Like, surely not every stadium could be this loud. I remember we're 4-0 down, something like that's it. And George Wally goes, oh, get up, you're going on. So again, I jump up, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm playing in this arena. And I can remember the centre-backs were Davizas and Distan. And I know the ball breaks, like bouncing around, and Jamie Capel just gets a toe on it, and he kind of toes it through. And I remember just putting the afterburners on, just getting after it.
Distan's quick as well, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm putting the burners on, and Harper comes out. And the only finish I can do is a toe punt, is a toe poke. So I poke it, and it flies into the corner. And even now, I don't even get to celebrate because we're falling down, but I run. I think there's about 2 minutes left. I run, I get the ball out of the goal, and I'm running back to the centre circle, beaming smile. Even though we're getting pumped 4-1, like it's my first goal. And I remember Jules Burley, after the game, kind of making a point saying that the performance was a disgrace, but look at this young lad, he's come on, he's given his everything, he's got his first goal. And again, all the first team were really supportive. I've got the football put out on my shirt. They've all written on it like, oh, congratulations on your first goal. So it was just a really, really fantastic season, to be fair. I think that was, again, I got pumped there. I think I got beat at Newcastle probably 95% of the time, whatever club I was at. But that was a really special moment.
I remember the game just like it was yesterday as well, because an hour and a half before the game, I'm doing rehab, shock, I'm injured. I just come back from a stress fracture in my left shin, and I'm doing some strides and some runs up the stairs. And obviously all the Ipswich players come out and come and greet me and blah, blah. And I can remember that you were on the bench that day. But it was also, remember Titus and Marcus Bent, I think they travelled up. No, Titus travelled up with the squad, but wasn't involved. And he came out with me the night before to the quayside. And that kind of like sealed the deal for him to come to Newcastle the next season. He was like, I like a bit of this. So, yeah, I can remember watching the game. And, yeah, to score your first goal is always memorable. And like you said, to put the afterburners on Sylvain Distan as well. Yeah. He was quick.
Yeah.
You just left him for dead, and a great finish. Instinctive toe pump, bang. Great goal.
Newcastle had a great team, though. Kieran, without you, Nobby Solano, Rob Lee, Gary Speed. Shearer scored his 100th goal for Newcastle. Now, a lot of Ipswich fans will always moan about Jonathan Barnett when it says about the destruction of our great young team. But now I'm thinking, maybe it was you, Kieran. Were you taking players out and about up in Newcastle around, you know, just showing them the sights? It sounds like it.
Well, again, it was the old story with Jonathan Barnett and David Manassi was when I played for England under 18s, he come and introduced himself to my David. It was Jonathan let David do all the donkey work. So David come and introduced himself to my mum and dad and said, I'm an agent. Your son's going to need me. When I got back from England, my mum and dad said, you really need to speak to these people. I was like, I don't need an agent. I always got told that Ipswich is a family club. I'll be rewarded. Anyway, they just said, you have to speak to these people. Like, listen, we can always say no. And for an hour, we probably had a meet. And for an hour, 55 minutes into the meeting, I'm bored out of my head thinking, I'm never signing for this guy. And I can remember the last 5 minutes and he said, I can get you an Adidas boot deal and you'll get paid. And then you'll be able to go to the factory in Stockport and fill up your car. And I was like, where do I sign? I wasn't even bothered about contact. I was just bothered about going to the Adidas store up in Stockport. They had the whole factory where they made all the Adidas kit.
Yeah.
I remember I had a car at the time. I had a Vauxhall Tigra, and basically it was filled. Like when you open the doors, all the kit was falling out. My dad was getting out for a year. And then, yeah, again. So when I'm in the first team, I obviously said to Richard, he said, who's your agent? I introduced him to Richard Wright, then Matt Holland, and then Titus. And I think Titus probably maybe have introduced Darren to. So, yeah, maybe Ipswich fans won't like me after this because I was the first one to bring him into the club. But I always say this, clubs, there's no loyalty in football from clubs or players. It's if I did my cruciate and I only had 6 months left on my contract, the club would get rid of me. That's the way it is. And so they need people who are professionals to help them. And obviously Darren went with Stella and I know for his early part of their career and they got him the moves at the right time and he went on from strength to strength.
Yeah, there's still that emotional tie as a fan. But yeah, I guess that we get that, you know, you're kind of, you know, just a product that clubs are going to use and move on. I guess one of the questions I've got, and I remember your Vauxhall Tigra, Kieran, I think it was a horrible orange colour, but you were both, you know, we're in the game, you know, very, very early and stuff like that. And when you started giving these contracts and the money, how difficult did you find that back then not to think, actually, I've got loads of money now, I'm just gonna give up?
One of the kind of stories, I mean, certainly for Kieran, is that I know that he obviously got onto the big money quick. Do you know what I mean? That's just a known kind of thing around football that Kieran certainly got to that like, rapid, whereas it might have taken me more time to get there. Do you know what I mean? But it was one of them where Ipswich, because I think because Kieran went from Ipswich to Newcastle, that's a big jump. Do you know what I mean? For me, I was quite progression. So I went from Ipswich to Charlton, where it's not dissimilar in terms of like they're not going to be massive payers, but they'll pay decent. It was only when I kind of got to like Spurs, and even they're not the biggest, but then it was like Sunderland, Villa, they were like the big ones, you know what I mean? It was where it was like, okay. So for me, it was kind of progression. So it wasn't that bad, if that makes sense, for me to kind of worry about. Even though I'm back in London at Charlton and on good money, it wasn't like, oh my goodness, I can't believe he's getting all of that. Do you know what I mean? I kind of felt like at the time, it was just what I was getting, like compared to other players, it was just what Charlton did at the time. Like Charlton all of a sudden couldn't go 100 grand a week, bang, have that. They just wouldn't do that. They couldn't do that. Whereas it seems like Aston Villa, these not even Spurs used to do it back then. They're probably doing it now, but they weren't big players back then. Even not massive compared to like Newcastle of the world. So for me, it was okay to kind of. I didn't really have to think like that.
So we move on to February 2002. It must be around there. That's your 18th birthday, I guess. You signed your first professional contract, and also, I think, scored two goals for England under-19s versus Germany at Portman Road. So a lot was happening then. Do you remember much about that England game at Portman Road?
Yeah, I'm looking at the man of the match trophy right over there.
Best answer I've had so far.
It was brilliant. But do you know what's weird is that, because as you said, I've played in every England age group up until that point. I remember the under 19 manager, he came and watched me in the under 17s or 18s, and he said to me, listen, we've got a I'm gonna need you to do me a favor in a couple of months. And what is it? I'll let you know nearer the time. So what's he on about? Obviously, it was to play in this game for the under 19s, which was a level above, at Portman Road, me and Matty Bloomfield it was. But I remember getting up to that age group, and mate, they had some players in that team, by the way. People like Lionel Morgan. I don't know if people remember him, but he had bad injuries. But he at Wimbledon was insane, incredible. Dean Ashton, who doesn't get a lot of credit, but mate, he was a proper. Did you play him at West Ham? Proper finisher.
Yeah, very good.
So there were so many in this under 19 team. I remember thinking, oh my goodness, like wow. But I felt like I belonged at that level. It went really well. Just said I scored 2 goals on my debut. And I think I only played another 2 games for the 19s before I was in the under 21s. But I remember it was good because obviously all the Ipswich Town fans come out. It was sold out. And it was a good game against a good German side as well. So it was all seemed to be happening around that time. Being in the first team, playing in the England under 19 games. As you said there, signed a professional contract at the start of that season. Season before when I was 17, it was all happening though, because I felt like I was really finding my feet when I was about 18 years old.
Talking of England playing at Portman Road, obviously I was fortunate enough to do the same.
Yeah.
It's a story that I'll never forget with you. And it was as we're leaving our hotel and we're getting our police escort into the ground, there's loads of fans, and we've actually come in the Portman Road entrance. So we're going past the centre spot and we're turning right to go into the stadium. So there was hundreds and hundreds of fans. They must have been there for ages. And I'm looking out the window and seeing if I can recognise any. And there was Darren Bent there, and he was there with his missus at the time, or a girlfriend or a companion or whatever. And he was clapping. He was like a proper fan. It was like, the look in your eyes that day when obviously there was the Bex, and that was like, you could see you were thinking, I want this one day.
Yeah.
It's crazy, like how you were there as a fan and then you've gone on to represent your country. I still remember this day, thinking of all the people to see. You've been queuing up to see the England coach come in. And yeah. Remember, he was a professional footballer in there, but he still had the adulation for the top players in our country and in the Premier League. And there he was, and it always stuck out of me. So as I'm going to the, obviously it was great playing in front of my home fans, but I always remember that Darren Bent and his missus was there, like clapping in the.
Yeah, I remember it, because I remember it, obviously, as you said there, Beck was in, I think he was sitting with Rio.
Yeah.
But I remember the standing, because I wanted to get there early, because I wanted to see it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're talking about superstars, so I'm thinking, wow, I need to see, like there's thousands of people, but I remember just saying, listen, we need to get there early. And I must have been standing there for about 40 minutes before you got there. But I wanted a glimpse just to see like what it was like. I remember getting in, as soon as you went in, I got in the stadium early. I was in my seat watching you guys, how you played. I mean, it was incredible. Like, I'm glad that England did that at Portman Road, because that really helped me in my development, seeing these guys at that level. Because you can't get no higher than that. You talk about the best players in the country on that pitch at Portman Road. So seeing that for me was like, I remember going to training the next day talking about it. Fucking how good was he? How good was he? It was incredible.
Yeah.
Did you feel then that England was it a chance for you in your career? Did you think, you know, you could make your full debut and play for England?
No chance. And if you're realistic, no chance. Because obviously Ipswich Town at the time were in the Division One. You look at the likes of who was up front, would have been what, Owen? I can't even think, but the calibre of centre forward would have been, oh my goodness, like, what is going on here? Because I saw the strikers that were in the under-21s ahead of me, the likes of Shola, Francis Jeffers, Jermaine Defoe, Bobby Zamora. So I'm thinking these guys are in the 21s. So there's no way I've got to bypass them to get to that next level, to get to the Owens. So I'm thinking to myself, I didn't even think of it as trying to play for my country. I thought of it as just, if that's the level I've got to get to, I've got an awful long way to go.
It's crazy how you bring up that point where you doubted yourself a bit. But I think when Glenn Hoddle was the England manager and I was in the under 21s, he used to bring the under 21s into shape. So we'd have a full 11v11 with the first team. And I mean, it was proper competitive, where I remember my first England under 21, it was the, I think Princess Di had just passed away. And we played Moldova. And Gazza played for the full team.
Wow.
David Batty, Incy, the strikers in the squad at the time were Les Ferdinand, Ian Wright. We're sitting across the table going, oh my God, we've now got 11v11 against them. Yeah. Bex was playing, and it was just like a who's who of like Premiership 11. And we were beating them, and they were getting angry, and like Gazza and everyone was trying to, they then started trying to boot us and that. And you're thinking, okay, you know, you kind of think,
yeah,
oh, so they're not as great. Yeah. Oh, they are as great, but you're doing all right. And that kind of gave us the confidence. And it's a shame now that with social media and not being able to trust, I don't think even Gareth would allow the 21s to come up and play against the first team and stuff like that. But that gave us real inspiration that, hey, yeah, we could definitely be in the squad.
See, they must have changed it up, because when I got in the 21s, we didn't even see the first team. I think it was once we stayed in the same hotel, and when they walked through the England, it was like, look who it is. But that was it. But in terms of training, we never saw them. Completely different.
Yeah, it's mad.
2001-2 finish, you had 7 appearances and 2 goals. Your first league goal was against Middlesbrough in April. Came on a sub, and I think you probably scored about 20 seconds after. And that's also the debut of Darren Ambrose. Like you say, the two of you were linked. How did it feel for you? You know, you've come into a team in the Premier League. You know, you've played in European football. You've scored at Newcastle, and then ultimately at the end of the season, Ipswich are relegated.
Yeah, it was a disappointing one. But it was kind of a weird kind of transition for me, and Daz, to be fair, because I travelled with the first team the start of that season to score my first goal in pre-season. So I felt like I was doing well. And as you said, they scored my first league goal against Middlesbrough at 17, like my first touch. And then you want to kick on. But then you're in this weird kind of phase where we get relegated. I think we played the last game of the season. I think we played against Liverpool, if I can remember right, and we got absolutely smashed. I think it was 5-0 or 6-0 or something like that.
Titus gave Michael Owen a goal.
Yeah, and I think he gave 2 away. He gave Anelka one as well.
Yeah.
So, I remember after the game, everyone's disappointed. I remember George Burley coming up to me and Ambrose and saying, listen, you two be ready for next season. Like, I know we've gone down, it's disappointing, it's horrible, but you two are going to be big for us next season. So don't come back thinking that you're going to be part of the squad you two are going to be playing. So, like, get yourselves ready for next season. So you're disappointed in one breath because you're thinking, I want to be at this level. You want to be going to Anfield. You want to be going to Old Trafford, St. James's Park. But then when the manager comes and says that to you, listen, you two, get ready to play. You're like, okay. Like, it's almost like we're ready to go then. So it was a big summer for me again. Me and Daz went away. We worked really, really hard. And when we came back, we made sure we were ready.
Just talking about Darren Ambrose, I just want to go back. We obviously, the FA Youth Cup against Southampton, the final when we won. Obviously, Brian always says basically it was, we were tough to beat and hopefully Darren Ambrose would come up with something special. But do you feel, Southampton, listen, Southampton were probably the better team over the two legs, just didn't get the result. But when you see all the players that went on and kicked on from their youth team, do you feel that we should have had more players from that youth team that kicked on and had better careers?
Yeah, because the Southampton lot was a year below us.
Mm.
Right. So the team that me and Ambrose played in the youth team, we played above ourselves. So we played against the Arsenal. We lost in the semi-final. We won 4-3 at Highbury, but lost 4-2 at Portman Road. Okay. When you look at that Arsenal youth team, the likes of Jeremy Alladier, Jermaine Pennant, I mean, their youth team is a superstar upon superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you look at my actual age, Ipswich Town, me, Ambrose, Robert Dickinson, Matthew Bloomfield, Ian Westlake, Matt Richards. Yeah, I mean, I think 4 of us played in the team at the same time, into the team. But you're right, there probably should have been more. The year below was the one really where they probably should have had five or six as well, because they had like Dean Bowditch, who should have gone on to do big things. Owen Garvin was in that youth team, I think, as well. I think he played a
good career at Ipswich, yeah.
Yeah, there was a fair few. So when you think about the ones that went come out of the youth team and then went on to do really well, you'd probably only say maybe me and Ambrose were the only two that went on to. And when you look at the conveyor belt, as I said about Ipswich Town, I don't think that's Ipswich Town's fault. I think maybe it's the mentality of the player that they got to a certain level and then went, you know what, that's fine. We've made it to the first team. We're comfortable. We're good. Whereas, well, you know, Ambrose came to you guys early. Do you know what I mean? Probably maybe he probably admitted himself. He came to you guys too early because he probably wasn't ready for that. Do you know what I mean? To be in the team with what you guys had. So me and Ambrose probably were the only two that had the mentality like, we're not standing still now, we're in the first team. I want to get back to the Premier League. I want to keep going and going and going. So maybe that's probably maybe the only disappointment that not more of us were in the first team. We probably should have been.
Yeah.
At the start of 2002, three scored away to Millwall in a draw and Bradford at home in a loss. And then in September, you scored in the League Cup at home to Brighton, which was ultimately the last goal that you scored under George Burley, with him being announced later in the month that he was being sacked. How did that news break with you? And you know, how did you feel at the time when the news was announced?
Yeah, I was gutted, but the whole season was tough because the year before that, we'd won the Reserve League. Of course, Dale Roberts, obviously God rest his soul, was the manager of that reserve team. We won the league under him. I had my fantastic season under him. As I said, winning the Golden Boot that year. He was kind of George Burley's like rock in some capacity. So as obviously his health kind of deteriorated towards the end of the season, you could see that it was affecting George. And then when we went away on pre-season, like George wasn't himself. Like I remember there was that picture going around when he was drunk at the airport. Someone had snapped a picture of him. And he just wasn't the same. But when he got the news that he got the sack, I was gutted. Because you're talking about a manager that believed in me from a young age, gave me the opportunity. I remember being on the train, pitch him coming out and working with me one-to-one. When a manager like that goes, you think, you're worried about who's going to come in next. You always think, well, who's it going to be? Am I going to get another manager in that's going to believe in me like he did? So I was gutted. And I remember loads of the squad. There were some members of the first team that weren't, because he weren't playing them. He didn't get him. Didn't have a good relationship with him. But I had a fantastic one with him. So I was gutted when he left.
Kieran, as a former player for George Burley, would players have reached out to him at that point? You know, what would have happened in that situation?
Of course. Even managers who in the past who I haven't really liked, if they lose their job, at the end of the day, we have got a human side. We do show empathy, and I'd always reach out and say sorry that you've lost your job, and keep your head up, and hopefully you get a job very soon. It is, like you said, Darren's saying, there'll be some people who are relieved. There's someone who gets a second chance, a clean slate. Like, for instance, we're talking about James Norwood. James Norwood was with the 23s. Paul Cook goes, James Norwood comes back in. That's just the way football goes. You just got to go with the flow of it. But yeah, for an outsider looking in, when George Burley went sacked, I just thought, in a way, the worst possible thing that happened to it, which was coming fifth their first season, because then all this new stadium was being built. We were bringing in Finidi George on probably ridiculous money that the club probably couldn't financially secure. And it was like the club got carried away and was spending money that they didn't really have. And like I said, and then when it went wrong, and there's always the second season syndrome. I say this all the time, the first season, no disrespect for Ipswich Town. I was playing for Newcastle at the time. I don't want to lose to Ipswich, but it's that kind of, it's only Ipswich, you know, players, there's motivational levels, isn't there, Darren, where you're like, oh, Ipswich Town, it's kind of a complacency. But the second season, teams now know what Ipswich is all about. It's always Sheffield United have proven it when they went down as well. They had the first season. So it was just a complete mess. And I just thought that George was the fall guy, which is unfortunate for him, because what he achieved winning the manager of the season and that, I didn't think he deserved it. But like I said, nothing surprises you in football.
It's important when a new manager comes along that you make your mark, and you did, Darren, in Joe Royal's first game in a 1-0 win again in the UEFA Cup at home to Slovan Liberec. Do you remember much about Joe when he first came in and his impact on you, when, you know, and how different was he to George Burley?
It's funny because I remember that game as well, because I saw a lovely volley. I remember that. It's a nice volley.
But, you remember all your goals, you liar.
But now I remember when Joe came in, he came in with Willie Donaghy. And Willie is a strange character. When we sat down with him and we were speaking about some of his methods, we're looking around thinking, what? Is he serious? Like, some of the stuff that he wants to do. But them two work in tandem. Them two work together, like, so closely. Like, Joe trusts him. He trusts Joe. But I didn't really know too much about Joe, and obviously that he was an Everton legend that people said and Manchester City. But I didn't know anything about his managerial kind of credentials or anything. But when he came in, him being a forward, he quickly got it. He simplified it for me, what he wanted me to do, how he saw me playing, how he could improve me, what he wanted from me. And he relayed it as bluntly as he could. Like, there's none of this kind of putting his arm around any players. He was old school manager, whereas if he tells you to do something and you do it, fantastic, you're doing your job. If he asks you to do something and you don't, he'll give you the hairdryer treatment. He was as blunt as that. And there were times, certainly towards the end, where we fell out loads of times, argued for fun. But I get it. And I think at the time, we played fantastic football. Anyone who watched Ipswich Town back then, under Joe Royal, you couldn't have not been entertained. Because we could never win a game 1-0. I mean, his debut was 1-0, but we could never win a game 1-0, 6-4, 5-3. And that's probably ultimately, as we'll probably speak about later, what cost us. Because we just couldn't, we couldn't see our games. Everything was like a blockbuster.
Going back to Willie, is it true that he used to play football without a ball? And you had to visualise shape and visualise where you're passing the ball, and you're all standing there pretending to pass it to each other and make them...
Yeah, he's doing all stuff about visualization. He did stuff where
he was big on yoga as well. Yeah,
big on yoga, big on, like, we threw this thing where we'd have to walk forward, and then we'd have to put our head right back and throw ourselves forward so we could get used to kind of being on the front foot. Like, honestly, if anyone from the outside was watching, I said, "Go, what are they doing?" But he believed in all this stuff, and I mean, what he was good at was head tennis, by the way, because before every home game in the little gym that used to be upstairs at Portman Road. It was me and Ambrose, then it was me and Matt Richards. We play against him and Joe Royal. Now, Joe Royal's got no hips. He's got two metal hips. But what he has got, he can head the ball. So Willie used to just pop it up and he'd just go bang with his head. So it was, they were great in tandem, both of them.
January 2003, you scored your first brace in a game, which was at home to Morecambe in the FA Cup. We won 4-0. And then followed by another brace at home to Preston, and then Town go to Sheffield United, and you score in a game where we lose 4-3 in the FA Cup. Yeah. Do you remember much about that game? I remember a real sucker blow at the end.
Yeah, I do remember that game, because I remember, I think me and Ambrose came on, because I came on against Preston and scored the two. And then I think I came on, and me and Ambrose came on in that game against Sheffield United. And I think I scored pretty much straight away. I think Ambrose tried an audacious kind of volley from the halfway line, which I think someone came off and cleared off the line. But I remember Michael Brown scoring an incredible volley. That's before he started kicking people. That's when he could play, Michael Brown. But all of a sudden, he turned into an hard man and wanted to just kick everyone. But back then, at Sheffield United, he could play. And I remember it was just incredible. I think we had a few of them ding-dongs with Sheffield United around that time. But that game there, we got sucker punched at the end. We lost 4-3, but... Again, I remember thinking that there game summed up Joe Royal in a nutshell, is that he never was beaten. Doesn't matter if we're getting beat 3-0, 4-0. It keep bombing forward. None of this, all right, we're getting beat here. Let's just kind of not get beat anymore. Let's just kind of show it up. He'd be like, no, I want to get myself back into it. So flood men forward. And for me, being an attacker, that was fantastic. It was brilliant to play in. But if you're a defender, you're probably thinking, well, hold on. Where's my protection? I've got no one sitting in front of me. Where's both my fullbacks gone? It was just completely, for an attacker, fantastic. But if you're a defender or someone who's defensive-minded, you're pulling your error.
A few days after that, and you touched upon it, Dale Roberts sadly passed away. And it was a really poignant time. I wonder if you could kind of talk us through from the time that you heard the news of Dale passing away, and then that fantastic game against Sheffield United, which was, you know, quite rightly dedicated to Dale, and you scored two. Just talk us through how you were at that time, please.
Yeah, it was difficult because I only worked with Dale for that 1 year properly. But of course, he'd been watching me in the under-19s, in the under-17s. He'd been watching me and you know, Dale was one of them guys that obviously was hard as anything. Kieran would know as well. He was always swearing, always F this and F that and this, that and the other. But when he gave you a bit of praise, it meant more. Because if he's giving you some praise, then he don't give many people praise, by the way. If he gives you that, then you know you've earned it. Like, I can remember our first game in the reserve league was against Charlton away. And we drew 3-1, I scored 2. And their big Danny Shitu was at the back, centre back. And everyone was scared to go near him. But me, I was flying to tackle, I was trying to pin him. Even though I had no chance of pinning him, I was trying to pin him. I was nicking the ball off his toes. I was trying to go past him. Whereas everyone was kind of like, oh no, he's too big. And I remember after the game, he said to me, oh, like, you lot are running around like scared of him, he's doing this. He's only 15 or 16, he's trying to tackle him, he's putting him on his arse, he's scoring goals, and you lot are just, so that kind of gave me the big confidence, and that's what it was like with me all season, which is why I had such a good season. So when he passed, I was gutted, as everyone at the football club would have been, because he would have been a big influence on a lot of people's career getting to that first team, because he was probably the last line of defence in some regards, because he'd toughen you up mentally, physically, before you got in the first team, because he knew what was to come. So he wasn't kind of softening you up, oh, you'll be fine, get yourself up to the first team, everything will be smooth. He was kind of like, if you ever do that up there, they'll crucify you, they'll murder you if you do that, if you do this. So when he left, I think, as I said, a bit of George probably left with him as well. It was a little bit, it was sad, but I remember his funeral, it was a really, really sad occasion. But I've got real fond memories of Dale, I really have.
How was Dale's demeanour doing the reserves? Because obviously when he came in at Ipswich, he was George Burley's assistant manager. And then George had this kind of knack of, obviously you get bored of the same voices, don't you? So in my time there, it was Brian Hamilton who came in, worked with the first team. Then it was Stuart Houston. Then it was John Gorman. So then for Dow to then go down to the reserves and not away from the first team, a lot of people would probably sulk, see that as a downgrade. But was he fine with that? Just always enthusiastic? Because that's one thing he always had, was enthusiasm for his role in the club, when even when he was the first team.
Yeah, he was good. He had this real knack of, I mean, you've got to think about it. I'm on the way up, so I'm passing people on the way down. So you've got the first teamers back then, which is why I think in modern day football, the reserves were such a good thing, because you're playing against pros. At the end of the day, you're playing against first teamers. So he was really good, I remember, not only with the youth coming up, but with the reserves coming down, the likes of Richard Naylor, who wasn't playing that much, or whoever it might have been, just talking to them, saying, listen, just go out there, work hard, put a shift in for me. That's all I ask. I'll treat you with respect as long as you treat me with respect. So he was good in that front, you know what I mean? But he was also good as well at telling people, for instance, if a youngster like myself was doing well and a first team had come down, he might have to make that difficult call by saying, listen, I know you need minutes, but he's smashing the goals in. So you're going to kind of have to just bide your time, or like, I want to give you minutes, but in a minute I can't, because, do you know what I mean? I can't stunt his development just so you can have a bit of a run around, a bit of a kick around. So, and that happened quite early on, Kieran, because I remember we played Fulham and I think I had 6-6 or something crazy like that. I just scored 2 the week before against Arsenal. And I remember we played Fulham away, and Richard Naylor was the striker that came down, and Dale was like, listen, D, you're going to have to, I'm going to have to put you on the bench because he needs minutes. Yeah. And we were like 3-0 down or something like that. And I came on, I made a difference. Keep on making saves, made a real difference. And he never did that again. Like, because he knew that he just couldn't do that anymore. So I remember the next game, he just said, listen, Rich, you have to stay on the bench here because Darren's got to play. And that's where he was really fair. Whereas a lot of managers might have gone, nah, I'm going to have to do what George wants. He didn't do that.
I hate it. I've been a 23 manager. We dread it when the first team come down.
Yeah, of course.
We dread it. And it's no disrespect to the first team, but again, they see it as a punishment. They don't really want to be playing, especially now you're talking about the South East Counties League. Back at the day with the reserves team, I remember playing Ian Wright and things. Now it's you're playing against 21-year-olds, 20-year-olds. Does it Caden Jackson really want to be playing against a 20-year-old and stuff like that? And we'd rather play the Mayor Morris's and that. So, yeah, it is a challenge being the reserve team kind of manager.
Yeah.
Did you play in Dallas Testimonial?
Yeah, I did, against Newcastle.
Yeah.
Was that against Newcastle?
Yeah, you beat us 2-1. I can remember, again, fair play to Bobby because with the Ipswich links as well. I literally come back from holiday on the Monday. I think a few others did as well. And we, obviously, I think the game was like on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And usually you're meant to have a 2-week solid base of running and that. And it was a gamble from Bobby as well, where to say because you could get injuries and that. And he was like, do you want to play? Of course I do. Dale Roberts, Ipswich. And I can remember playing that game and it was a good turnout and you lot won 2-1. I missed it.
I can remember about that as well. Yeah, you're right. It was packed to the rafters. Ambrose was playing for Newcastle because he'd left, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So one thing, I remember smashing him, which I didn't mean to do. I slipped. But secondly, I remember using that game to see if I was better than the last time I'd been in the Premier League. Yeah. So I used it because I think at the time you had your left back. It was the dreadlock.
Olivier Bernard.
Yeah. Left back. I remember thinking, all right, let me see if I'm more comfortable now in this game than I was the last time I played. And I remember feeling like, okay, I've done it right here, actually. I'm not scored, but again, I feel like I've made another step to that. Do you know what I mean? So I remember a game again like it was yesterday.
Yeah. I can remember it was a testimonial, it was a friendly, and Craig Bellamy getting booed. Yeah. That did make me laugh. There's no friendly matches when there's an Ipswich Norwich connection. Yeah.
Rightly so. Going back to the Sheffield United game, 1-3-2, we were 2-0 down with 35 minutes to go. Pablo had been sent off. What did you think about that?
I remember just thinking, we go 2-0 down, and then as you said, Pablo does something stupid. I think it's his second booking, I think. And we go down to 10 men. I remember thinking, oh my God, how are we going to get ourselves back into it? But again, that just sums us up because a lot of people would have gone, all right, let's just kind of consolidate what we've got. All I can remember was Joe Rogan, Darren New high on the right, Ambrose high on the left, and Marcus Brent was down the middle. And he just said to me, every time you get the ball, I can't remember who their fullback was, he just kept saying to me, every time you get the ball, turn, run at the fullback, play one, just hit Marcus and just go in behind him. And that's how we started off the second half. I get the ball, give it to Marcus and just keep going. And obviously back then I could run all day. Like the fullback just couldn't keep up. I just kept 1-2s running all day. And every time Ambrose got the ball, Joe Ross said, cut in, Bentley make the run in behind and just keep feeding it in behind. And that's how we kind of broke them down. Then we get the first goal. I think the first goal was, I think Jermaine Wright put a nice crossing. And I think I siphoned volley into the corner. And then the place erupts. Obviously, a Portman Road erupts. And then Ambrose scores the second. I think Bentley kind of hooks one in and Ambrose heads it.
But when header.
Yeah, Ambrose scores a header, yeah.
I thought you were going to say a 25-yarder.
He scores a header. But then we don't celebrate. Ambrose gets the ball up the net and we run back to the halfway line. And then the last one is obviously Ambrose at his best, where he goes past someone, gets to the byline, just digs it up and I score the header. But that again was Joe. That there was Joe Royal. Summed them up. Like he didn't want to settle for, okay, we're losing 2-0. We're down to 10 men. Just leave it. He kept flooding more men forward, taking more and more risk.
He mentioned Pablo there. And obviously, a bit like the Martin Royces, Pablo's seen as an icon amongst the fans. Is maybe borderline legend, but real icon of the club. Mm. Would you agree with that? Or do you
think
he's overrated, underrated? Because obviously, Roy Keane dismissed him as a bad player and a bad egg, but our fans have got, he's got a place in the heart of our fans.
I would say Pablo underachieved. That's what I'd say. Because when he first came into the club pre-season, I'd never seen someone hold the ball up as well as he could. Like how strong he was. I remember when he broke Marcus Stewart's jaw, them two were tossing him in training and the ball went up there, but bounced. And because they've been nibbling each other, he just went to volley and Marcus went to head it. And he's sort of whack, broke his jaw. But But I remember thinking,
he won't be an icon no more now.
So I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this guy, how good is he? He was fit, he was strong. Not the quickest, but he was quick enough.
Yeah.
So when I eventually, obviously, when I think I left before him. I can't remember when he left Pablo. But I can remember thinking, like, waiting for him to kind of get to the Premier League, burst on the scene, and we start to see him scoring goals here and everywhere. And then when he went somewhere and came back to Ipswich, I remember thinking, well, he's better than that. Like, I remember him being better than that. So, yeah, I know the fans loved him because he scored some goals, his celebrations with the supporters. Some of the goals he scored were brilliant. But for me, underachieved. He was better than the level that he played at. But maybe he didn't want to. Maybe that was his ceiling. But when I look back and I think about the training sessions, the technique, what he could do, for me, underachieved.
Going back to March 2003, and there are things that the games that I watch, and I think I'd really love to know what was going through the players' heads. So we're away to Norwich. We're already 1-0 up. Fabian Wilnes has scored. Norwich are on the attack, and the ball breaks down in the defence. And you, one of the best moves you've ever done, in my opinion, in the game is in your Ipswich career, is in that game where you just take the ball off. You just nick it off the midfielder on the edge of the box. You give it to Dean Bowditch, and then he plays the ball through to you. You're just going over the halfway line. And I had a look before we came on the show, and it's 5 seconds that you're running with the ball before you stick it past Robert Green. What's going through your mind at that point?
First of all, I can't remember who the defender is, but there's someone chasing me. And I remember I shrug him off and he falls over and starts eating the grass. but all I can remember is once I did that, I'm thinking, right, just be composed. Just relax, hit the target. That's all I kept telling myself. So when Greeny come out, he didn't make it easy for me, but I kind of knew what I was going to do. I was just going to roll it in past his left foot. But also as well, when I watch it back, I think they try and play some kind of tannoy. Something happens with a tannoy, because as I'm going through, I think they say something like, someone's so-and-so's car or something. So they tried something, because I'm beaming around. But obviously, I remember when I go through and I rolled it past Robert Green, all I can remember was, I don't know what I'm going to do here. So I just took my shirt off. No hint of muscle anywhere. Just took my shirt off. Don't even know what I did with the shirt. But I can remember the fans were going crazy, jumping over the advertising board. I just wanted to jump in with them. And I remember it just being like, what a derby this is. Now, listen, I go on to play in bigger derbies than that. But when you play, when you're in that area and all week, it's just Norwich, got to be Norwich, got to be Norwich, got to be Norwich. I remember thinking it was the biggest game on earth. Like, I remember thinking, oh, games can't get bigger than this. This is the biggest of the biggest. So, but I understood that it probably was for them supporters. But yeah, I remember it being a great day, and beating Norwich at Carrow Road doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, thank you on behalf of all the Ipswich fans who were there. Definitely, it was fantastic. Final game of 2002-03. You scored away at Derby County. Matt Holland also scored in that game, and that was Matt's last game for the club. Obviously, he departed. Darren Ambrose went as well. What were your views at that time? Was it a team that was getting better, or was it a team that was losing its better players?
It was tough because Daz had left before that, because it just, unfortunately, went into administration, so we're struggling. So obviously, we're having to sell off certain assets. Ambrose went relatively early, and he was on fire that season. I mean, some of the stuff he was doing that season was incredible, which is why it doesn't surprise me that Newcastle come and got him. But yeah, Matty left at the end of that season. I think Herman might have even left at the end of that season as well. I think they both might have gone to Charlton at the time. So it did feel like a lot of our players were just kind of going and going and going. So it was difficult. I know the affiliation the fans have with Matt Holland, now he's not an Ipswich Town icon, he's a legend. Like, the fans absolutely love him. So I know that was tough for the club, but it was almost like, again, me being a youngster at that time, I was kind of focusing on my own development. And yeah, we were losing good players, but it was about, right, make sure I come back next season, right, make sure I come back a better player than I was this season. So it was a real big, big change. I know players were coming in, but it just felt like a lot of the core of the good players that have been there for maybe a little bit of time were starting to kind of move on to the next level. So it was at that time just about focusing on myself, really, and making sure I come back better than the player than I was the season before.
Who was main captain when Matt left?
I'm trying to think, who was captain when Matty left? So I want to say it might have been, was it Jim?
Must have been.
It might have been Jim. I think Jamie Campbell might have even left at the end of that season as well. I can't even remember who was captain. It must have been Jim.
And a bit of chalk and cheese with the captaincy there from Matt, who was probably never shouted at anyone, always encouraging, and then Jim, who was just on it, weren't he?
He was. I remember Jason DeVos got the captain's armband, but I can't remember who he got it from, because it might have been Jason DeVos. He might have got it straight away, but I can't remember who got it straight away.
It was Jim Jordan was the captain that year, and Fabian Wilnes captain one game. I just had a look at an FA Cup game. One of the things I wanted to say to you about the start of 2003-04, and I've looked at the players that made their debut. You'd scored 6 goals by the end of the calendar year. Town were in fifth. But players that had made their debut over that period of time, Kelvin Davis, excellent keeper, but you know, it's very difficult for me as a non-professional footballer to kind of list players' names and say that they're not very good. But I think we would agree that the likes of Drissa Diallo that came in, George Santos, Chris Bart-Williams joined, with a sprinkling of, who do we have? Matt Bloomfield was in there, and Sam Morrow, Gerard Nash. But the player I want to speak to you about, we've talked about Pablo, you mentioned Marcus Stewart and stuff, but I think it was around November time, October time, Shefki Kucha joined. And I think if you're coming up with a, you know, ultimate strike partnerships and stuff, you know, certainly Bent and Kucha would have been one. What was he like when he came?
Oh, incredible. I mean, he's up there. Like, I've played with better strike partners in terms of better players, like people like Emil Heskey, Cameron Jones. But if you talk about your favourite, he'd be up there, maybe top of the list. Because he worked incredibly, you would have seen him, he worked incredibly hard. He used to chase absolutely everything. No one could beat him in the air. Like, in the air, he was incredible. He jumped higher than anyone. He's touched at times. But this is what summed up, is that what a guy, incredible guy. I spent a lot of time with him. Finished training, we'd go and eat. I'd go around his house in the evenings, he'd come around mine. But what summed up Chef, we played a game against Rotherham away, I think it was. And he's getting absolute pelters from Jim, as you can imagine. Jim's giving him pelters. Like, he's bouncing off him. It's coming off his shin. Someone puts a ball into the box, open goal. He puts it over the bar, right? Jim shouted at him, "Yo, crap, you're this, you're that." Honestly, going mad, right? Shefki's is fuming now. I'm looking at his face, and he didn't really get angry, but he wants to kill Jim. He's fuming. He gets the ball about 25 yards out, 30 yards out, and he hits this shot, and it just goes top corner. In the celebration, he's trying to run to get to Jim. He's got about 4 or 5 guys jumping at him, holding him. "Chef, no." He's going, "Hi, I told you. Like, honestly, he's screaming at Jim. It's so funny. He's getting crazy. But that was Chef in a nutshell, is that the simple stuff. We go, "Chef, come on. What's that?" And then you can just produce something where you just go, bang. Like, and obviously our kind of strike partnership was obviously the best the last year that I was there, because I had 20 goals and he had 20 goals. It was just like, it was incredible playing with him, but selfless, would work hard for the team. You always know what you're going to get. Yeah, of course, he was a bit raw. Technique wasn't the best, but could always score goals.
You are a typical striker, you are. You know, they always say their favourite player is the one who does all their running, all the donkey work, and they score all the goals. Michael Owen, who's your favourite striker to play with? Emil Heskey. Who scores? Emil Heskey. I wonder why. Yeah, brilliant.
Fantastic. He was a great player. Were you ever tempted to try the swan dive celebration yourself?
Never. I mean, when he first did that, I'm a sample chef. Does not hurt. He was like, "No, I'm fine. I mean, he was, when I say he was a great guy, I mean, he was massive, like huge in terms of just when he took his shirt off, ripped. But even where he lived, like he lived in, I think he lived out near Hadley, I think, in this massive house, which he was renting. Like, he had all old furniture in there. He had a golf course in his back garden. And I was like, "Chef, do you play golf?" He was like, "No." That's why do you live here? So we'd go out there, we'd just hit golf balls, play football, golf. Like, but he was just a great, all-round great guy, like, great guy. I know for a fact he's tried to get back to the football club in some kind of capacity coaching. It's not quite happened for him, but, yeah, really, really good guy. He's another one who I'm guessing the fans would call like a cult hero, because he was just fantastic.
Yeah.
It was March 2004, your first professional hat trick at Walsall, 20 years and 39 days. Not the youngest hat trick scorer for town. Dean Bowditch has got that. But how did that feel once you got three?
Yeah, it was nice because Dean gets his hat trick the week later, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was disappointed because he got his live on Sky. I got mine on a Tuesday night with about 3,000 people there. So it was it was brilliant. I mean, again, I can remember it like it was yesterday because first half I was having one. Couldn't do anything first half. And then even my first goal, if you look at it, Jermaine Wright has a shot, the keeper parries it, and I tap the rebound in. But if you look at my contact, when I put it in, I bobble it into the ground, it bounces over the line, like I couldn't do anything. But then kind of that gave me the confidence. And then the next one, I think Jim McJordan rolls me through, and I smash it in, and the keeper probably should do better, but he doesn't. And then the last one's a routine cutback, I put it in the net. But I remember it was brilliant. I've still got the match ball set upstairs, all the lads sign it. I remember Jim's message on it, which is quite funny, was about time you did this. that was Jim's message. But no, again, a great day. Obviously, Dean kind of made his debut. Not made his debut, but he played in that game, played really well. And we started to develop a real understanding, me and Dean Bowditch. But yeah, again, to score your first hat-trick for town away at Walsall, it was fantastic.
How many hat-tricks did you score in your career?
Four or five. Not many, you know.
You know the exact number, is it four or five? Acting like you know, four or five.
But were any of those hat tricks ones where you scored a penalty as well for the third goal? I'm never keen when a striker does that. I'd rather see them score in open play.
Yeah, one was Bolton. No, Bolton was the second one was a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So coming towards the end of 2003-04, You scored in a home win, an away win at Wimbledon. We lost at home. You scored. We lost at home to West Brom, and we won, like you say, away to Rotherham, and also you scored in a game away to Gillingham, which fast forwards us to we've reached the playoffs.
Oh.
How did that feel at that point? You know that we did you kind of recognise that actually this was a real step up, and this is where everybody wanted to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing because I can remember, I know two of them seasons, because we lost to West Ham both times, didn't we? I remember two of them seasons, first half of the season, we were outstanding. And I can remember one of them, it might have been the second season, where I'm driving home with Matt Richards in the car. And I remember saying to him, I can't see how we're not going to get promoted. Like, this town side is, we're playing as good as we've played in a long time. I can't see how we're not going to get promoted. But as you said, we go to West Ham again and we just couldn't get over the line. West Ham just had our number. I think the second time they had like Marlon Harewood, Bobby Zamora, there's some good David Connolly, who used to absolutely tear us to pieces every time we played against them. We just couldn't live with them. And they unfortunately beat us twice in two of the playoffs. But it was disappointing because I think with the side that we had at Ipswich Town at that time and the football that we played, the exciting football we played, we just lost our nerve at the wrong time. Like, we lost our nerve twice against West Ham. And the first one probably hurts more because we won the first leg 1-0. Is this the one you're talking about?
Yeah, who scored in that game? Do you remember?
So we win that 1-0, and that was the disappointing thing because we dominated that first game. We get the goal, and then we let it slip again in that second leg. So it was... But West Ham's always a tough place to go. You know, Kieran will know that. Upton Park, when them fans get on side, incredibly tough place to go.
Yeah, I think the home leg, when you scored just before the hour, it's one of those games as a fan that I think, you know, you remember the noise. And I remember that. The second leg, like you say, was a huge disappointment. And I think there was two second half goals, I think, from West Ham. And it was always coming in that game. So how did you pick yourself up, you know, during that season? Because, you know, at the end of 2003-04, your career, you 92 appearances and scored 36 goals. So, you know, you're scoring at a good rate. But, you know, did you think that 2004-05, did you think it was going to be the season that Town would get promoted? And also, at what point did you realise that might be your last season with Town?
Well, I spoke to Joe Royal at the end of that. I think it was the 3-4 season. And I remember him saying to me, give me one more year. Just give me one more year. Because I said, okay, I'll stay for another year. Because I spoke to Charlton before they were interested. I think Everton was a team, Manchester City. And I said, okay, I'll give you one more year. Because as I said, I've been playing against other teams like Dean Ashton was moving to the Premier League. He was flying with Norwich. Colton Cole was having his loan spells at like Villa, I think he would have been at the time. But these guys are obviously playing the Premier League. And I think, well, I want to get there. I need to be part of this. So I remember saying to Joe, okay, one more year. I hope we get promoted. But if it's only one more year, then like for my own development, I need to test myself at in the Premier League, like playing week in, week out. He was like, all right, give me one more year. And obviously that last year, I gave it everything. Like, well, I think we all gave it everything. We played, Cheffy played really well. I played really well that season. Kelvin was phenomenal that last season. We had so many good players. I think like Alan Mahn came in that year. Kevin Horlock came in. He was a good player, Kevin Horlock. Tommy Miller was playing really, really well. So we had a really good team. So then when we got to the end of it and we didn't get promoted again, it was just like, oh, that took the wind out of our sails. Because I think after that game, I left. I think Tommy Miller's left. Kelvin left. Sheffy left. I think a fair few of the squad left. So I think that was kind of our last chance, all of us, to kind of get this team promoted.
I think, yeah, there were 69 goals that between you, Coochie and Tommy Miller. We go back to December of that season. You scored your 10th goal of the season by December. That was in a game that was away to QPR. And the reason that this kind of stood out for me was another Darren's debut, Darren Curry. And I just wondered how he impacted on your game. You know, he's a fantastic player and, you know, the passes that he could make. And just your thoughts on him.
Technically unbelievable. Honestly, brilliant. I've never seen someone who, like, he wasn't the quickest at all, but he always had that yard of space where he could just chop, he'd tend to cross, chop. And he was, again, not one of them players where you knew exactly what he was going to do and you still couldn't stop him. So I think, right, I know he's going to chop back, but he'd pretend to shoot, I'd go, oh, no, he's going to shoot. Dive in and just throw it back again. He was incredible. And that game there, I remember, we wore the orange kit, 1-4-2. It was a really, really good game. I remember he scored in his debut, he scored a really nice goal, if I can remember rightly. And he was, a really good guy, but not only on the pitch, off the pitch as well. Really good guy, spoke really well, was friendly, couldn't do enough for people, wanted to see people get better. And again, he was the typical kind of character that we needed in that dressing room at the time. As you said, he brought a lot of other players in that necessarily didn't work. Darren Curry was definitely one that did work.
I'm glad you gave him credit, because I'm going on when you speak to a lot of strikers. If a winger's got half a yard, they've made their run. They want that ball delivered.
Yeah.
The moment of the run. Once you chop back, they go mental, don't they? Usually.
Yeah.
You got an understanding and you obviously anticipated the chop back to then make your next run. Mm. But I know just the Shearers, the Owens, all the top strikers, they used to, if you got half a yard and you used to chop back and they'd go mad. Get the ball in. What? I've just took on my wing. They're so selfish and driven. So I, again, as a fan watching from the outside, he was a player that excited me. You knew it was coming. It's a bit like Mahrez today. You know the chop's coming.
Yeah.
But if you don't dive in and try and stop the left foot, it will pit in the top corner. So you have to, and he just chops you inside out. I love it. Yeah. He was a good player.
He was good.
You scored some iconic goals, Darren, and none more so, in my opinion, than December 21st, 2004. We were playing Paul Jules Wigan at Portman Road, 1-0 down after a fantastic...
Bainsey hit one from about 30 yards, didn't he?
So what just interesting, because what I remember about that game, it was like a real foggy day or misty day, and there was rumours that the game might be off, but we're 1-0 down, and Bam Bam gets us to 1-1, and we're going right late into the game. And I just wonder if you kind of talk us through what you remember about that.
Yeah, as you said there, I mean, I remember Bainsey. I knew Bainsey really well, know him really well. We've been in England youth together, and I remember him hitting this rocket. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, like, it's the best goal I think I've ever seen at Portman Road, by the way, that goal that he scored. And then Bam Bam scores the header. And I remember we're pushing. But I remember it's just a long clearance. And I remember someone puts it down the line, and I'm thinking, right, I'm going to get to this. But I'm thinking, right, I'm going to get to it, control it, and bring someone else in. And at the, like, kind of about... maybe 2 seconds before, probably about a second before, as I'm running towards the ball, I look up and the keeper's like nowhere to be seen. Like, he's almost like, he kind of got caught in no man's land. So I've gone, you know what? I'm going to have a go here. Like, regardless whether he goes or not, I've got to have a go because he's so far off his line. If I get this right, it's going to be a goal. And obviously I managed to get it completely right where I've got to hook it straight over his head. But again, when we beat them, I thought, because they had a really good team, Wigan. I think they had Roberts and Ellington up front that used to cause us problems all the time.
So when Jimmy Bullard was in that team as well. John Phelan was the keeper. And obviously that late goal put us top at Christmas, jumped ahead of Wigan. And everything was aligning, I would say, that we were, you know, as you mentioned, you know, your last season was really good. And I think, just having a look here, it wasn't the first time that we went top, but we were top suddenly from that point until we played Watford in February 2005 when we lost at home 2-1. During that time, obviously you had scored two against Coventry. We beat them and away to Reading. March 2005, we hit Forest for six. I think Tommy Miller got a hat-trick and you scored in that. You then had a double at home to Rotherham in a 4-3 win, and then you scored in a goal in a draw against Leeds. But I want to take you to April 2005. We were at home to Sunderland. Any thoughts at that point? You know, when you were getting to this stage, you're actually thinking, if we don't get promoted and we go into the lottery of the playoffs, that might be your last game, because on that game against Sunderland, age 21 years and 71 days, you scored your 56th and final goal for town.
Yeah, no, I mean, I weren't sure that was ever going to be my last one. But I can remember, obviously, as you said, the game. But again, because we were playing so well that season, we should have got promoted automatically, 100%. Because, as you said, we were top at Christmas, we're playing really well. Playing entertaining football, as you said, we absolutely smashed. I think we smashed Forest 6 that week. I think we beat Crewe the following week 4. So we were playing really well at that time. But again, the playoffs, when we played a game against Sunderland, it was like, okay, we still thought we had more than enough. Because of the previous experiences of going out in the playoffs, we felt, you know, we've got a chance here. We can do that. But then when we draw West Ham again and get beat by them again, it's just like, and to be fair, we didn't show up in any of the games at home or away. I think we played the home game. I think we played the away game first this time.
And we just didn't show up. The away game, I think we were 2-0 down, and then keeper Jimmy Walker scores an own goal, I think, from a Tommy Miller free kick, and Coochie gets one in the second half, and it's 2-2. But for me, been quite a few low points as a Town fan sitting in Portman Road, and that certainly was that night. Bobby Zamora scored two in the second half, And that really felt like it was an end of an era, particularly with the likes of you and Shefky and Tommy Miller moving on. Fantastic record. How does a player leave a club? How do you say goodbyes? You know, when do people hear about this? Do you even get a chance? And you know what kind of happened at the end of that season for you?
Yeah, it was tough, but it was funny because we lost in the playoffs to West Ham. I remember going home. And I remember, I think it might be the next day or the day after, I get a phone call from David Manassi. It was that Alan Kirby had called up after we lost that West Ham. The next morning, he called up, I want to buy Darren. Like, I'm on first leave, I want to be able to talk to him. And because I'd said one more year, they gave me permission to talk to Alan Kirby. So after about 2 days, I'd have set the phone call. They want me to go there. I was more than happy to go. I wanted to go. But I remember having a conversation with Joe Royal on the phone. He said, thank you for everything you've done for me. I've really enjoyed my time. I spoke to one or two of the other players who I was close with as well. I remember having a really good chat with Matt Holland, because obviously he was one of the main factors why I went to Charlton, because he was there. Herman Haraldsson was there. I knew this person before. Marcus Bent, obviously he come there later on, but I remember just having a real good conversation with some of these people, and Joe Royal just saying, listen, you know, you're more than good enough now, you're ready for the Premier League, you've scored a lot of goals for us this season, unfortunately it wasn't meant to be, go and be a star in the Premier League, go and show everyone what you're about, and that's what I tried to do.
Do you remember that, Kieran, when Darren left?
I do, and I just touched on it earlier, when we were talking earlier, and I was saying there's not much loyalty in football with regards to clubs will soon get rid of players or players will soon desert a football club. And I think him being able to go the year before, and Joe Rowe asked him, come on, give me one more year. And he knew he had three Premier League clubs waiting in the wing. Goes to show that he was loyal to the club. And I think because of that loyalty, he should be commended. And obviously it was the perfect opportunity. I still think if he'd have left the season before, I still think he would have been a success in the Premier League. I think you were ready, like you said, but you gave Ipswich another year when you didn't have to. So I think you should be commended for that. And I've just, I didn't think about it at the time. And it's funny that you've had two playoff losses and I've had three. And we never even got to go to Wembley. that even pays me more. You know, sometimes I think, I would have just liked to have gone to Wembley to win the day out for the whole fans. Okay, if we'd have lost. But at least we made it to Wembley. We didn't even make it to bloody Wembley. It's unbelievable. And then there was obviously the Mick with his, he had the 1 year with the playoffs, didn't make it to Wembley again. So I don't know. Is it seven times we've been in the playoffs and only once we've gone to Wembley or something like that? It's crazy.
Yeah. And most people know this, but the day we played at Wembley, I was flying out to Jamaica on my honeymoon with my wife sitting next to me saying, where would you rather be watching Ipswich play at Wembley? And I was thinking, what are you going to say next that I'm going to have to lie about? But yeah, apparently I said 3 weeks to Jamaica was much better. I'm looking at your career, Darren, and kind of conscious of the time. And I don't particularly want to rush through this last bit, you know, because you Charlton broke into England, big money moves. And, you know, I didn't realise this until I did my research. So, yeah, kind of, I think if we wrap it up at this point, but one of the things I kind of want to ask you is, you know, obviously the Ipswich Town now, where they are in the third tier of English football, is this a season where we are going to get ourselves off to Wembley, or are we going to finish top two?
I hope so. I mean, listen, I look out for it all the time. I hope so. I went to a couple of games last season to watch the team. But that League One now is tough. Like, make no mistake about it. When you look at League One, Championship's tough, but I think almost this season, League One's going to be a lot tougher. When you look at some of the teams that are there, we know Sunderland have just got out of there, so they're not going to be there. When you look at the likes of Derby are now dropping down into that division, Sheffield Wednesday are still there. Charlton are there. Portsmouth are still there. There are some big teams in that League One. So you have to get off to a good start, I think. I don't think you can be playing catch-up. This season is going to be one of them seasons where you can't play catch-up. You're going to have to get off to a good start. I know every team in that division, you go through a bit of a wobble, but you want to be having your wobble kind of like around Christmas time where you're still in the mix. Then you can bounce back second half of the season and then go again. You don't want to be getting off to a horrendous start and then have to keep playing catch-up. So I think Kieran would do a good job down there. I think he did well in his short space of time he did last season. But it's about bringing the right players in. I know they've got a war chest down there to spend, but I don't think that... I think Premier League can get away with it. I think Premier League can get away by whoever you want and just bringing them, putting them together. I don't think you can do that in League One or Championship. I think you've got to use the squad you've got, bring in maybe one or two and then try and kind of grow it. Like, it won't work. Paul Cook showed you when you try and buy 15 new players, it doesn't work.
How did you find when you got the call? Because obviously managers in the past, they've tried to get ex-players back involved, but it's usually the 78, 81 players.
Yeah. And
I always used to think it was a PR kind of stunt. Obviously, there's a lot made of Mark Ashton. Fans idolise him at the moment. They really like Kieran McKenna. So when you got the phone call that you, Darren Ambrose, I think James Scowcroft, Alan Lee, so it weren't just the old brigade, the new brigade were going to come in. I think you lot were invited to Portman Road. They showed you the presentation of how the team was going to be played. How did you find that?
I mean, they went into great detail. I mean, obviously, they invited us there. They showed us, obviously, the background of the football club, who owns the club, how much they own, how much the previous owner, I can't remember, Marcus Evans, owns. They showed us all that kind of stuff. Then they showed us training methods, what he wants to do, how he sees the club. And it was good. Do you know what I mean? It was decent. But I've always been under the opinion, I get that. It's always nice to know that type of stuff. But the most important thing is on the pitch and on the training ground. Like, you can show me all these kind of numbers and figures of what you've got and what you're going to do in the community, which is all really important. I get all that community work. I get all that. But ultimately, it's what happens on the pitch. Now, if you're doing well on the training pitch and what you're doing on the match day and it's working, you're winning games, everything else will take care of itself. But that's the most important thing, I think. I know, as I said, a lot of clubs talk about the community, and that's the most important thing. Well, no, the most important thing is the pitch. If the team's winning and playing well, the rest of the stuff will take care of itself. Because if Ipswich are winning, getting promoted, that draws a bigger fan base in. You get more people that want in the community want to get involved. You get some better kids in the academy. It all stems from there. But for me, everything's got to get right on the pitch first before you can start worrying about anything else.
And my last question, and I know you probably don't want to gloat and say I told you so, but you were one of the very first people to talk about Paul Lambert.
I told you.
You did, to be fair. You've been online, you've been on TalkSport, you've been on all these things, and you said your say, you had your say about him. And like I said, I know you don't want to gloat because it was proven right that he kind of failed as an Ipswich Town manager. But how did you obviously you got banished to the reserves? How did this all come about?
So our relationship is kind of strange because, of course, people know I've got no real love for him. But ours was weird because I remember I was away when they sacked Alex McLeish. My phone rings. I'm in St. Bart's at the time on holiday. My phone rings. It's Paul Lambert. Like, well, I don't know the number. Hello, Darren, it's Paul Lambert. Oh, how are you doing? You're right. Yeah, I'm the new manager. How are you doing? He wanted me to talk to him about the squad. So I spent about half an hour on the phone to him. Obviously, speaking about last season, what I thought, rah, 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 rah. A couple of days later, I'm still on holiday. He's calling me every couple of days. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? I'm like, cool. So we come back. He makes me captain. So I'm thinking, oh, good, good, good. And all of a sudden, it seemed to just change overnight. So we play. He wants to bring Benteke in. And then I said, that's fair enough. He said, I want to play you two together. We don't get off to the best of starts anyway that season. But the relationship just kind of just went from nothing. So I remember we played Manchester City in the cup in the week, and I'd play the Premier League on the Saturday. And he went, listen, Darren, I'm going to rest you. For this game. Before that, it was the whole captaincy thing. So I come in, we were playing, and he goes to me, Darren, can I have a word with you? I'm like, yeah, no worries. Come over. He's like, listen, I'm going to take the captaincy off you. Not because I don't think you're doing a bad job, but I want you to just focus on scoring goals. I don't want you to have too much pressure about worrying about this and the other. I went, okay, fair enough. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. Then Ron Vlahovic comes up to me in the change room and goes, oh, did the manager speak to you about the captaincy? I went, oh, yeah. He said, I'm not going to be captain. He just told me now, first time I've heard of it. But oh, like he told me last week, a couple of weeks ago, that I was going to be the captain, right? So that was the start of it. So I said, okay, fair enough. If that's what he wants to do. And then we play Man City in the cup. And he says to me on the Saturday, on the Tuesday, listen, we've got Man City tomorrow. I'm going to rest you for the Man City game because I want you fresh for West Brom on Saturday. I'm like, all right, cool, no worries. Play West Man City, we win 4-2, play really well. Comes in on the Saturday now, we're sitting there for the team to, pulls the sheet of paper up, team up on the bench. Went, what? So I go and see him. I said, I thought I was resting in the week for me to play against West Brom. He's like, yeah, I was thinking that, but no, the team played really well, so I'm going to leave you on the bench. But support your teammate. He said something like quite patronising. So that really lost me. Anyway, I come on. We're losing 1-0. I score 1-0. Celebrate like crazy. I'm about to run to the bench. People are running, like jumping on my back and everything. Like, it's funny.
Kooky celebration.
Honestly, running to the bench. But from that, it just went mad. So obviously, like he didn't then play me, and he tried to leave me out of squads. And then we played Fulham away. And this was that kind of what broke it completely in half. We played Fulham away. Now, all season, he'd been allowing players to leave straight from stadiums. Like, so Shea Given was in Manchester, go straight home. Wherever we were, people were just going left, right, centre. We get beat by Fulham, and I don't get on the team coach. I go off and I'm going out in London or whatever. So I don't get on the team coach. I leave. We've got an open training session on the Monday. He goes, oh, lads, all coming to the changing room. Before we go out, I need to talk to you, love. He's like, right, disappointing result on Saturday. And he looks at me and he goes, and you, if you ever effing do that again, leave the squad. I'm like, hold on a second here. You've let everyone else do this all season, make a mockery of it all season, but don't have a go at me now because we've been beat by Fulham and you're pissed off about it. Don't have a go at me because these people have been doing it all season. And he's like, you should be doing that. You should know better. I'm like, I just told you, if you'd have said that at the start of the season, then I wouldn't have done it. But you've let everyone do it all season. So you can't be saying having a go at me now. So we're arguing back and forth, screaming at each other in the change room. And from that, we barely spoke after that. I think we said two words to each other. He left me out of squads. put me in the stands, made me trouble, but sit me in the stand. Honestly, tried everything, absolutely everything.
Yeah. Mad. Still crazy how, as a player, listening to players from different eras and that, when the team sheet goes up and you, if you dropped and the manager hasn't pulled you beside, that is a no-go for most players, isn't it?
No.
To be found out. When that comes up, I've seen the disappointment, but most managers I've had. Remember George used to meet an hour and a half and about 10 minutes in, he used to come and give the curly finger to someone. Everyone's like, oh, he's not playing, he's being dropped. So to be a go from club captain to finding out on a team sheet you're not playing, not good.
But it was poor. But like when he got the Ipswich Town job, people asked him about it. That's why I said he was the wrong man for the job, because he is all about himself. He's someone that needs to be in complete control of everything. And when you go to a family club like Ipswich, they've got good heritage, good people that are respectful. He's not that person. Do you know what I mean? He's not that person. He's not the type of person that would kind of buy into that. It's all about him. He did it at Villa. A massive club like Villa, he did the exact same, made it all about himself. People, they hate him. Went to Ipswich, it was never ever going to work.
Yeah. Plus, he was a Norwich man as well.
Exactly. So there you go.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've got two quick questions. One, what was it like at Villa when Roy Keane was Paul Lambert's assistant?
I liked Roy. I've got massive respect for Roy. I got on really well with him. I was one of the rare ones that did get on with him. But he did a lot of Paul Lambert's work, because after games, Paul Lambert would try and say something and the lads would look at him like, yeah, or whatever. Roy Keane would start to let off and people were like, whoa, like, what's happening here? So, he was good. Like, Roy really enjoyed working with him. Good coach, good player. I mean, when he used to join in training, wow, incredible. But now, I think a lot of misinformation about Roy, but I got on really well with him. Personally, I got on well with him.
Great. Last question. I just had a look. You've got nearly 500,000 followers on Twitter. And like I said at the start of the show, you were waiting for a train and you asked people to, you know, if they've got any questions for you. And I had a look at that and then just kind of wanted to know two things. What's it like to interact with fans in that way? And two, if Kieran joined Twitter, would he get more followers than you?
Yeah, it get loads of followers. I mean, listen, most football fans out there are okay. Now, if you're going to be on social media, you better have thick skin, because certainly when what I do at TalkSport, people are always looking to say something. Hold on, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, of course, you do that question and answer, you're going to get some donuts on there that are going to just be idiots. But he's kind of like, I can now laugh it off. Now, of course, Kieran, if Kieran got on there, he's going to have loads of Newcastle fans, Ipswich fans, West Ham fans that are going to want to talk to him. Yeah, he's going to obviously get idiots. Do you know what I mean? But that's just everything. But I guarantee the majority of them wanted to ask him, what was he like? What was it like there? Like, Bobby, he played under Bobby Robson. Everyone wants to hear about Bobby Robson. Everybody.
Yeah,
do it. Get on it.
Nah, I'll be interacting with too many of the idiots. That's my problem.
we shall see. Darren, thank you ever so much for your time. I really appreciate that. You certainly were an icon and a goal scoring icon at Ipswich. So wish you the best of luck, and we can tune in to Talk Sport to hear you tomorrow morning, I guess.
4 till 7, not tomorrow morning, 4 till 7.
4 till 7, tomorrow afternoon. There you go. I will listen to it in the afternoon then. That's why I always miss you. Thank you. Take care.
No worries at all.
Dumb man, Benny.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.